This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. July 15 rolls around in about a month. For most of us, it's another day in the middle of summer. But readers of David Nicholls' novel One Day, which has been one of the most popular recent books in Britain, will know that July 15, 1988, is the day that Emma Morley and Dexter Mayhew meet on their last day of school in Scotland, then go their separate ways. Each chapter of the novel is a snapshot of where July 15 finds Emma and Dexter over the next 20 years as they keep finding and just missing each other with dialogue that's been acclaimed for its crackling wit and observations. Nick Hornby, the novelist, calls it the perfect beach read for people who are normally repelled by the very idea of beach reads. One Day has just been published in the United States in time for July 15th, and David Nicholls joins us from London. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And talk about this technique of picking one day over a time span of 20 years.
Well, I wanted to write something quite epic, something about a large period of time and a large cast of characters. I myself turned 40 while I was when I was about to start the book, and I was interested in the difference between my 20-year-old self and my 40-year-old self. Yet to cover 20 years seems sort of exhausting. So I hit upon this idea of just taking a day seemingly at random and showing that day 20 times. So some of the days are very eventful and very significant, and some of the days are just very, very ordinary. But it was a way of telling a big story, but using snapshots, using 20 set pieces.
We should mention that when the novel opens, these two people are in bed together, but they don't seem right for each other.
Yeah.
Or am I wrong about that?
Well, I think it's certainly the wrong time for them to be together. So that the challenge was to constantly find ways to keep them apart, whether it's fate intervening or bad luck or bad timing or the fact that they haven't quite grown up enough. Each year I have to find a reason for them to delay, you know, what might seem inevitable. And certainly I think when they first meet, they're about as different as they could be. There's an attraction between them, but Dexter is very self-confident, very privileged, very complacent. Emma is very anxious, very insecure, very passionate and intense. So I think it would be the wrong moment.
Let me get you to read a priceless paragraph from the book where Dexter wakes up in Emma's room and points out some of the differences between them.
He exhaled through his nose and shuffled up the bed, taking in the shabby rented room, knowing with absolute confidence that somewhere in amongst the art postcards and photocopied posters for angry plays, there would be a photograph of Nelson Mandela, like some dreamy, ideal boyfriend. In his last 4 years in this city, he had seen any number of bedrooms like this, dotted round the city like crime scenes, rooms where you were never more than 6 feet from a Nina Simone album, and although he'd rarely seen the same bedroom twice, it was all too familiar. The burnt-out nightlights and desolate pot plants, the smell of washing powder on cheap, ill-fitting sheets. She had that arty girl's passion for photo montage, too. Flashlit snaps of college friends and family jumbled in amongst the Chagalls and Vermeers and Kandinskys, the Che Guevaras and Woody Allens and Samuel Becketts. Nothing here was neutral. Everything displayed an allegiance or a point of view. The room was a manifesto. And with a sigh, Dexter recognised her as one of those girls who used bourgeois as a term of abuse. He could understand why fascist might have negative connotations, but he liked the word bourgeois and all that it implied. Security, travel, nice food, good manners, ambition. What was he meant to be apologising for?
Welcome back to 1988. Dexter wants to be thought of as cool.
Exactly, yeah. I think he doesn't really have a vocation. He just wants things to be fun and attractive. I think he has an idea of life as spread from a magazine. And as his life goes on, he discovers that things are a little more complicated than that.
Having no particular talents or accomplishments or ambitions, he, I think we can say in this company, is naturally led into broadcasting. Well, it's interesting because some of the funniest sections are these satires of the world of theater and television. So if I could, let me ask you about an actor I've heard about named David Holdaway.
Ah, yes. He's not been seen for a while. David Holdaway was my stage name. I was an actor for about 8 years in the 90s. I had to change my name because there was another David Nicholls, and I thought if I changed it to my mother's name, she'd be touched. But I think then she saw me in some plays and was horrified that I was bringing shame on the family. I worked as an actor mainly on stage through most of the 90s, but I was nearly always in non non-speaking roles, animals, soldiers, silhouettes. I did a lot of big acting in very small roles. And for a long time, I was very bitter about that whole period. I thought of it very much as wasted time. But I'm getting a little more philosophical about it now. I think I learned a lot about dialogue and performance and good writing, mm-hmm. What distinguishes good writing. And I met some extraordinary people. For 3 years, I was at the National Theatre and I ran on stage every night and nodded at Judi Dench. And that was my role as a Russian peasant in The Seagull. And that was kind of as good as it got. But it was a privilege to be in that company.
It's irresistible to observe. There you were, an actor running on stage, playing animals, trees, speechless peasants. As a novelist, you get to control all of that.
Absolutely. It's the great sort of dizzy-making thing about being a novelist. You have a great deal more power. You're involved throughout the process. And if a book goes well, it's completely down to you. And if a book goes badly, then it's also completely down to you. Working as an actor in theatre, it's much more collaborative, much more social. There's a lot more debate.
There are times in the story when Emma Morley is pathetic and Dexter Mayhew is insufferable. But they see through to something else in each other.
I think both characters are very flawed. The great pleasure in writing a novel is you don't get to just write the behaviour, you get to write the inner thought process as well. And I think there are enough good intentions, enough self-awareness in their thoughts and in their inner monologue to redeem their worst behaviour. But I think it was also, I also wanted to write a redemption story. And for there to be some redemption, then there has to be some bad behaviour first. So I hope by the end of the book, they've become better, decent people.
Every year, they find each other again and spend some time. For something like 15 years, they wind up just saying, see you later. But without giving away too much, the theme of your book seems to be, it's worth it to hold out for that special someone.
Yes, I didn't want to be sentimental, but I think that there's a very familiar notion for most love stories, which is, that they're meant for each other. And usually there's a sort of eyes meet and there's a flash of lightning and that's it, they're together. And my own experience has been much more of a slow burn. So I wanted to write a love story that had all the passion and emotion of a classic, big, epic love story, but with no flashes of lightning. I also think there's a lot of fate in the novel. I'm not a great believer in real life of fate, but one of the starting points for the novel was Thomas Hardy. There was a passage in Thomas Hardy's Tessa the D'Urbervilles that inspired the novel, which I can't talk about without giving away the ending. But the idea that a missed letter, a phone call that isn't answered, a chance remark can alter the course of your life is quite a Hardy-esque idea. And there's a lot of that in the book. There are a lot of letters that should have been sent and phone calls that should have been answered.
David Nichols, his hugely successful novel, One Day, has just been published in the United States. Mr. Nichols, thanks so much.
A pleasure.